जय रघुनाथो कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ जीव द्वारी जय रघुनाथो कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ जीव द्वारी यशोद नंदन ध्वज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन ध्वज जन रंजन जमुन तेरा वंश हरे जमुन तेरा वंश हरे जय रघुनाथ कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ जीव द्वारी जय रघुनाथ कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ जीव द्वारी यशोद नंदन ध्वज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन ध्वज जन रंजन यमुना तेरा वंश हरे यमुना तेरा वंश हरे जय प्रभुपद 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 जय प्रभुपद
Jai Nityalila Purvista Astakara Sakasi Simanis Devangre Se Si Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Vem Sakaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadarha Sri Vasidhi Gaurava Sri Sridharha Sham Sandha Gopa Gopinatha Sham Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govaran Ki Jai Grantarab Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaurava Premanandi Shama Darshani, get that boy drum. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 5th Chapter, text number 12. Tasmai namo bhagavate Vasudevaya dhimahi Yanmayaya dujayaya Mambadanti jagadgurum Tasmai namo bhagavate वासुदेवाय धीमहि यन्मायया दुरायया मम वरन्ति जगद्गुरुम् तस्मै नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय धीमहि यन्मायया दुराजया मम वरन्ति जगद्गुरुम् तस्मै नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय धीमहि मम वरन्ति जगद्गुरुम् तस्मै नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय धीमहि तस्मै नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय धीमहि यन्मायया दुर्जयाया मां वदन्ति जगद्गुरुम् तस्मै नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय धीमहि यन्मायया दुर्जयाया मां वदन्ति जगद्गुरुम् It's interesting, this particular Sanskrit verse, when we do the word for word, we see that there are many words in this verse we're very familiar with, and they're common words that we know because they, first of all, are regularly used in various prayers, and second of all, because they're very important import, the meaning of these words, so very significant here. Tasmaya, unto him, namaha. Offer my obeisances. Bhagavate. Unto the personality of Godhead. Vasudevaya. Unto Lord Krishna. Dhimahi. Do meditate upon him. Yet. By those. Mayaya. Potencies. Durjayaya. Invincible. Mum. Unto me. Vedanti, they say, Jagat, the world, Guru, the master. So this word here, Dhimahi, those of us that have our Brahminical initiation, this is a very familiar word to meditate upon. But to meditate upon who? To meditate upon him. As we become more progressive, more advanced in our path of devotional service, the process of meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upon him, is very, very significant. And we know this, why? Because it's given to us, Vedanti, they say, okay, who's they? I mean, it's common, man, so many. What? Nothing I'm doing. I'm sorry, I completely lost my chain. At any rate, translation. I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna, Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, whose inconceivable potency influences them. Than being the less intelligent class of men, to call me the Supreme Controller. Purport. As will be more clearly explained in the next verse, The illusionary potency of the Lord bewilders the less intelligent to accept Brahmaji, or for that matter, any other person, as the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji, however, refuses to be called this, and he directly offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Vasudeva, or Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he has already offered the same respects to him in the Brahma Samhita, 5th chapter, verse 1, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Savakarvana Kanam. The Supreme Lord is the Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna, the primeval Lord, in his transcendental body, the ultimate cause of all causes. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda. Brahmaji is conscious of his actual position, and he knows how less intelligent persons, bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, whimsically accept anyone and everyone as God. A reasonable personality like Brahmaji refuses to be addressed as the Supreme Lord by his disciples or subordinates. But foolish persons, praised by men of the nature of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, feel flattered to be addressed as the Supreme Lord. Why such persons take pleasure in being addressed as God, or why such persons are addressed as God by foolish admirers, is explained in the following verse. Cliffhanger. Om Jnanata Marandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmalita Minatasma Sri Guru Guru Maha Mukam Kuruti Vachalam Pangum Jayati Girim Yakripa Tamahum Bande Shri Guru Dinitarino Vamsa Kapitiru Dishra Kripa Sindhu Vahivacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vashnavi Bhuvanamo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasiti Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisance is unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So, here's a very important quote from Prabhupada that I came across in preparing for this class. The process by which we give up our thoughts of material things is called pratyahara, which entails being freed from all material thoughts and engagements. The word abhidayat indicates that unless one's mind is fixed, one cannot meditate. The conclusion, therefore, is that meditation means thinking of the Lord within. Whether one comes to that stage by Astanga Yoga system or by the method recommended in the Shastras, especially for this present age, to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord, the goal is to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a statement Prabhupada makes that directly ties to the point of this verse, as Brahma opens this verse by making the statement that not only does he offer obeisance, but meditates upon Lord Shri Krishna. So the process of meditation, we know Brahma's very existence is based in the performance of tapasya and meditation, but he's meditating very specifically, as he indicates here, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in this statement of Prabhupada, there's a very important point that he makes. The goal is, this is how he, focuses the presentation here, this thing, that thing, so on and so on. And then he says, the goal is. So, when one is desirous to move forward in a particular field of work, or in scholastic achievement, political hope, or anything for that matter, any type of endeavor, it requires having a goal. If one doesn't have a goal, if one doesn't have a direction, then it's impossible to progress in that particular field, in that particular endeavor. Now, some people, in our modern language, we call them slackers, and my mother's day they called them bums. Don't
home, go get a job. That was a common thing we heard on Sangatan in the early days. You'd be out there in the streets doing Harinam or distributing books. Don't be a bum, go get a job. Actually, this is a job. This is the best job. This is the highest welfare work you can do for anyone. In any way, so such persons like that, they commonly denounce this line of thinking. Now I have to be focused, I have to have a goal, I have to move forward. No, just chill, man. You know? What was it we used to say when I was young? Cool it, man, cool it. So just, in other words, just let it happen, you know? This is actually a very hedonistic philosophy. Yo, don't push it, just let things take their course. The fact of the matter is, we have to be a bit driven if we want to succeed. Doesn't matter if that success is to be, you know, a big political personality, a famous celebrity, you know, a big business success, you know, whatever your goal is, you have to be driven. Similarly, we also have to be driven if we want to be successful in our spiritual life. Now, we may not have the same end result as these other goals, you know, that everybody in the world knows my name, or that I have more money than I could possibly ever spend on anything, or that I'm the lord and master of the largest country or political movement in the world. Those may not be our goals. Our goals may be simply to engage in the service of Krishna, simply to engage in the service of spiritual master, as we see right here, you know, Jagat Guru, the controller of the entire world. So this may be our goal, but it still has to be a focused goal to be successful. It's present in every activity we do. Those of us sitting here in the class this morning, we had a goal when we left the house. That was to arrive here at the temple. We knew the direction. We knew the route. We followed it, and we achieved that goal. Boom, we're here. All 8 or 10 of us. The point being that we have to have a focused goal to be successful in anything. Even something as simple as eating a meal. We have a goal, an empty plate. This is the goal of many parents when it comes to children. Just eat your vegetables. But I don't want to. I remember when I was a young child not having much interest in certain vegetables, particularly my mother's favorite, canned peas. For some reason, my mother thought canned peas was just something every child should eat. And so they would put them on the plate along with other various foodstuffs, which we won't insult all of you by mentioning in this august assembly. And if we did not care to eat them, if we even refused to eat them, that was okay. They were put into the refrigerator and served to us for breakfast instead of pancakes or cereal or whatever, because the plate was going to be clean. That's the goal. My mother's goal was somehow to get those peas into our body. So, you know, and I can assure you from direct experience, cold canned peas for breakfast is not fun. So, at any rate, even in a scenario like this, there is a goal and a focus that is sought to be achieved and a process by which to achieve it. So the process in this meditation is to know what, or in this case, who we're going to meditate upon. Meditation is not a process of emptying the mind, as some theologies present. Just empty the mind, let there be nothing. Prabhupada says it very clearly. See, we can't do that. Cannot empty the mind. The mind is... I heard an interview with a scientist the other day. What was it they were talking about? Oh, they were talking about this new telescope that's got pictures from, you know, some universe beyond whatever. And they were talking about the speed at which this goes back and forth. And the question was posed, what if we discovered something that could travel faster than the speed of light. Now, the speed of light is considered to be the optimum travel capacity, velocity, I should say. So the question was proposed, what about if we traveled faster than the speed of light? Is that possible? And immediately I get the radio, of course it's possible, you fool, it's the mind. The mind can travel faster than anything. I'm sitting right here and immediately, boom, in Vrindavan. Immediately, boom, go over down the hill. Immediately, boom, at this particular tree I know of in Govardhan Hill that I like to sit under and chant japa. So, the mind can take us there. And there are some yogis that can do like this. Prabhupada talks about that, how, you know, some certain yogis can submerge themselves in the water in one river and come up in the water of another river, you know, many thousands of miles away. Yogis have that ability. Actually, I had a dream the other day. Very interesting dream. I was in Vrindavan, and I crossed paths with some mystic. And he said to me, so what do you desire? And I said, I desire to swim in the Jamuna like it was during Krishna's time. And immediately I was transported into the Jamuna River as it was during Krishna's time, with flowers floating and beautiful crystal clear, you know, fragrant water, and it was just amazing, you know. So these yogis have that ability. But we've already got that ability. We don't have to do thousands of years of tapasya. Just let the mind wander. So this is part of the process of meditation, to focus the mind. Now, we're noted here by Lord Brahma himself whom he is focusing the mind on, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Brahmaji is not only the acharya of our sampradaya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So he's our sampradaya acharya, we would say. But he's also the creator of this universe. So I kind of think he knows what he's talking about. You know, if I'm at work and I have a question about a particular process, I don't just ask the person in the same department with me, do you know anything about this? No, I go to the person that is in charge and knows this information. So how do I do this? Okay, what you do is you open this, deal, and from there, and you open it, da-da-da, like that. So a suitable person to hear from is Brahma. Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya Sampradaya. Brahma indicating Brahma himself. Madhva indicating Madhvacharya for what he has contributed to this line of thought. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Gaudiya indicating the significance that each one of these personalities brings to our sampradaya. Therefore, we should pay attention. When Brahma says something, it's worth noting. And it's not just like Prajapa that we hear in the streets or on the airwaves or whatever. It's something essential. And that commentary, that statement, is the essence of this chapter that we're studying, this 12th chapter, starting with verse number 9, all the way to the very end of this chapter. It's Brahma instructing his son Narada. And right off the bat, Brahma's first response in verse number 10 is that I am not the supreme. Don't make this mistake. Yes, I create so many living beings and so much energy comes from me, and by my mere thought, personalities are created. I can manifest individuals from my toe, out of my nose. So, you know, none of us can do that. The least that comes from my toes is stinky sweat. So, you know, Brahma has the ability to do all. So, but don't think I'm the supreme. Very important. Right off the bat, he says this. And furthermore, he does not know, he doesn't want that people will think that his activities are the topmost and become bewildered. Doesn't want people to become bewildered. Now, speaking of bewildered, there's an interesting point here. In a morning walk in 1975, it was relayed to Srila Prabhupada that one of his scholar devotees, who out of politeness, we won't mention his name, those who know our history know, so out of the one of these scholar devotees had noted that due to Brahma's occasional bouts, shall we say, with the mode of passion, and the fact that he is our acharya of the sampradaya, this means that the acharya does not necessarily have to be a pure devotee. This is what this devotee was putting forth. Prabhupada very strongly said, who has studied this rascaldom? Now, if you look up in the dictionary, you will not find the word rascaldom. This is one of Prabhupada's unique words, rascaldom. A kingdom where rascal thought is the way. So Prabhupada then said, whatever Brahma may or may not be, he is our acharya. And then a second devotee continued to push this point forward with a different example, of Brahma's passionate actions. And Prabhupada cut him off. And Prabhupada said, why are you asking like this? You think that you should follow in his footsteps and behave also? This is your disease. So, Brahma himself, he does not shy away from his own shortcomings. This is the nature of humility, and the crestule of any good Vaishnava is this nature of realizing their own shortcomings. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we see that Naradaji is approaching the different personalities to find that personality who is the recipient, the greatest recipient of the mercy of Krishna. And so he approaches Brahma. And Brahma, you know, he's completely aware of his subordinate position to Krishna. And actually, when Narada begins to praise, when Narada approaches Brahma and begins to praise Brahma with various flowery words and wonderful prayers, Brahma actually becomes very angry. And it mentions that he covers his eight ears. Four heads, that's eight ears. There's only four arms, but in some forms he has more arms, so, you know, quite a task going on there. But he covers his eight ears and repeats with his four mouths, right? Repeats with his four mouths over and over and over again, I am just a servant, I am just a servant, I am just a servant. Sometimes we say things like that just to reinforce what we want to believe, and sometimes we say it to reinforce to others what they should know. So then he chastises Narada. He says, I am not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Have you not understood this from your earliest teachings? We are all firmly under the control of Mahamaya, who is simply the maidservant of Krishna. And since we are under her control, that means we are ultimately under his control. And why should you think I have been the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy? I have not even received a drop of Krishna's mercy. I continually think of myself, oh, I am a great spiritual leader. I am the controller of this universe. I am the grandfather of creation. I was born from the lotus flower of Lord Vishnu. And I always get angry. So this is an important point made here as well. Not only does Brahma not shy away from his own shortcomings, he is analytically introspective of what those are and why others should know them so they do not mistake his real position. And he lists them all. Oh, I think this, I think that, I identify in this way and that way, that, that. Plus, I always get angry. And then he says, Narada, you should know the Lord is only pleased by devotion. Yome bhakta prayachati. And I have no devotion. Ne bhakta. If I can simply avoid offending the Lord, I consider myself well off indeed. And this is Brahma's own words, you know. I gave benedictions to Hiranyakasipu, and this caused the Lord to have to assume the very unusual form of Nrsimhadev. And when he finished dispatching Hiranyakasipu, he chastised me. He said, do not give such benedictions as this to the demons again. This is the only time an incarnation of Lord appears for the purpose of saving one devotee. And why? Because of these benedictions of Brahma. Okay, you won't die this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, that way. So, I mean, it wasn't much of a sweat for Vishnu to figure this out, but Vishnu, okay, I can't do that, I can't. All right, boom, I shouldn't do it. So he chastised Brahma, don't give these kind of benedictions, it makes so much difficulty for me. And then, he mentions, I am actually the reason for the Govardhan Leela. It is my fault that the Govardhan Leela had to take place. Because who put Indra in charge? Who made Indra the king of the demigods? Who gave him the power he had? It was all me. And then Indra misused it, tried to destroy Vrindavan, showered torrents of rain down on the villagers. Krishna had to whip Govardhan Leela. So this was my fault. Just imagine that. Everybody's connected to Govardhan Leela. Anyway. So then he says, so what is this use of speaking any more about my disqualifications? I have no qualification for receiving the mercy of the Lord. And this is a powerful presentation by Lord Brahma. And if that's not enough, his subordinate position is further clarified by his quotes from the famous Brahma Samhita, which Prabhupada quotes in this particular purport. The entire Brahma Samhita is a testament by Brahma to the superiority of Krishna. Satchidananda Vigraha, he closes the verses. I'm simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, as Prabhupada states in this purport, Brahma understood that, quote, less intelligent persons, bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, whimsically accept anyone and everyone as God. And therefore, Brahma is very clear on the fact that he is not the Supreme Person, simply the servant. Now, in this connection, Prabhupada does state that Brahma has disciples, that he has followers, but that he refuses to allow them to worship him as the Supreme, in other words, above his position. Prabhupada was also very strict on this. The Guru is not God. If the Guru thinks he's God, then he is dog. Servant of God, yes. Same respect due as God, yes, but not God. And of course, we all know the history of our society that when that mistake was made, Prabhupada was very strong on squashing that idea. This is also true of Lord Shiva and others who have such high positions of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have disciples. They have followers. And by the way, disciples and followers are not always the same thing. We should understand that. A disciple is one who actually takes a particular set of vows in connection with their guru. A follower is somebody, yeah, he's great, I like him. Yeah, I'm part of that group. Yeah. It's true. No problem. They may or may not be committed. So, they see that personality as very powerful, as very mighty, but it's to be understood that that personality is not the Supreme. Now, it's often the case with zealot followers that place the powerful person as Supreme, or in our modern day terms, above the law. Zealots have very little vigyan, and for that matter, little to no gyan. Their knowledge is practically non-existent, and their realization of that knowledge, well, you can imagine how much less it is, since they have no knowledge in the first place. Therefore, we see many different religious traditions, political parties, celebrity cults, that the followers are only interested in that personality, and not the teachings, not the facts and not the details of that philosophy or that tradition. And when they're challenged, or when there's a dispute, something arises that doesn't settle well with them in their blind allegiance, they have no intelligence to understand the facts because they only have this blind following. And we saw this very clearly in the past times between the followers of Daksha and the followers of Lord Shiva in the famous Daksha Yajna. Now first, of course, in that gathering, just to bring this up to this point, Daksha cursed Lord Shiva in some very, very strong words that were totally inappropriate. Daksha himself did not have the humility we see manifest in Brahma here. He actually was thinking, hey, I'm a pretty big deal. And that's my daughter, so she's an equally big deal. And the son-in-law, I've got, you know, he's not such a big deal. The son-in-law was Lord Shiva, one of the controllers of the universe. So at any rate, he cursed Lord Shiva in very unpleasant words. And as they say, when it all began. Text number 20. Upon understanding that Lord Shiva had been cursed, Nandeshwar, one of Lord Shiva's principal associates, became greatly angry. His eyes became red, and he prepared to curse Daksha and all the Brahmins present who were tolerating Daksha's cursing of Shiva in harsh words. Anyone who accepts Daksha as the most important personality and neglects Lord Shiva because of envy is less intelligent, and because of visualizing in duality will be bereft of transcendental knowledge. Pretentiously religious household life, in which one is attracted to material happiness and thus also attracted to the superficial explanation of the Vedas, robs one of all intelligence and attaches one to furtive activities as the all-in-all. Daksha himself has accepted the body as the all-in-all. Therefore, since he has forgotten the Vishnu Pada, or the Vishnu Gati, and is attached to sex life only and its expansions, within a short time, he will have the face of a goat. Those who have become as dull as matter, now this is a real insult to a transcendentalist, very simply as dull as matter. What's that we say? He's not the sharpest tack in the bag. Because the tack should be very sharp, you know, it's got to push into things. Not very sharp, which means the function is useless. So, those who are as dull as matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are messingly involved in fruitive activities. Such men have purposely insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. An equally horrible curse to a transcendentalist. May you have peace of mind. May you be successful on your path. May you continue in birth and death. May those who are envious of Lord Shiva, being attracted by the flowery language of the enchanted Vedic promises, and who have thus become dull, always remain attached to furtive activities. These are some serious curses. These brahmanas take to education, austerity, and vows only for the purpose of maintaining the body. They shall be devoid of discrimination between what to eat and what not to eat. They will acquire money, begging from door to door simply for the satisfaction of their body. When all the hereditary brahmanas were thus cursed by Nandeshwar, the sage Bhrigu, as a reaction, condemned the followers of Lord Shiva with a very long, strong brahminical curse. One who takes a vow to satisfy Lord Shiva or his followers, such principles will certainly become an atheist. Such persons will certainly become an atheist and be diverted from the transcendental spiritual injunctions. Those who vow to worship Lord Shiva are so foolish that they imitate him by keeping long hair on their heads. When initiated to worship Lord Shiva, they prefer to live on wine, flesh, and other such things. Bhrigu Muni continued, since you blaspheme the Vedas and the Brahmanas, who are followers of the Vedic principles, it is understood you have already taken shelter of the doctrine of atheism. The Vedas give the eternal regulative principles for auspicious advancement in human civilization, which have been rigidly followed in the past. The strong evidence of this principle is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called Janardana, the well-wisher of all living entities. By blaspheming the principles of the Vedas, which are the pure and supreme path of the saintly persons, certain you followers of Bhutapati, Lord Shiva, will descend to the standard of atheism without a doubt. Now, each of these two personalities, what they have said is shastrically correct. How they have applied it And how they abused it is where the fault lies. We see this quite often on the internet. Somebody will say something and somebody else will comment that, well, you know, it says, no. There was one devotee recently that posted that he was going to be giving a class on the subject of not criticizing Vaishnavas. And this whole litany of people jumped in about how, no, you have to criticize Vaishnavas, you're going to criticize Vaishnavas, back and forth, back and forth. So, just take a deep breath. The fact of the matter is the things that Bhrigu is saying and the things that Nandishwar is saying about these personalities are all correct. But they're applied incorrectly and with false ego and with anger. So how does Lord Shiva respond to this? Maitreya, in telling this story, concludes this. When such cursing and counter-cursing was going on between Lord Shiva's followers and the parties of Daksha and Bhrigu, Lord Shiva became very morose. Not saying anything, he left the arena. This is the proper attitude of one who cannot take part nor stop the situation as it is. Instead of wading into the fray, I've got to straighten this out, let me get the keyboard out. It's bad. So someone said to me, when there's detractors, do you engage them? I said, no, it's better just to let them go. You know, the minute you step into, what's that Mark Twain said? And I mean no offense by this, I'm just quoting something. Mark Twain said, if you wrestle with pigs, you got to expect to get dirty. So the point being that if you're going to get into an argument with people who are finding fault, you got to expect you're going to be in the middle of it. So here, Bhrigu and Nandishwar are both correct in their assessment, but incorrect in their application and understanding of what it truly means. So Lord Shiva doesn't get involved, he just leaves. So this is the type of blind following the Prabhupada is mentioning in this purport. This is the type of attitude Prabhupada uses with less intelligent persons who place people as the supreme, that are nowhere near qualified like that. Now, this conversation, Nandishwar, Bhrigu, others noted, very, very exalted names. Yet, due to identifying with their particular bodily conception of life, their particular group, their particular identity, they fall into this activity of cursing and counter-cursing. All due to forgetting who really is the supreme. And this all started with Daksha. The responsibility for all of this falls on him. This entire thing is his fault. He could have halted it from taking place, but due to his own bodily conception of life, and as Prabhupada would say, ahankar, he was instrumental in this all coming about. So, that, just a little side note on this particular pastime here. Lord Shiva gives the following instruction to Sati, because after this all falls apart, then Daksha organizes another jugga. It mentions three or four different Vedic juggas, which I didn't even recognize the names of, different homas that were being performed. And so after he does it, then Sati realizes, hey, it's a big party, all my sisters are there, everybody's all dressed up nice, and she wants to go, and she wants to encourage Lord Shiva to accompany her. And Lord Shiva gives her the following instructions about attending certain types of events. One should not go to anyone's house, even on the consideration of that person being a relative or a friend, when that person residing there is disturbed in their mind and looks upon the guest with raised eyebrows and angry eyes. Who wants to go somewhere where you're like, oh, you're here? Lord Shiva continues, if one is hurt by the arrows of an enemy, one is not as much aggrieved as when cut by the unkind words of a relative. For such grief continues and wounds one's heart day and night. Important instructions. So, back to the corn purport. So, here Prabhupada uses a statement that he quite often used in very, very many different scenarios with great conviction and forcefulness. And that is, foolish persons praised by men of the nature of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Feel flattered when addressed as the Supreme Lord. More times than you can possibly count, Prabhupada uses this phrase and explanation noted here. I mean, people know how to do this, go into the Avanapedia and put in a phrase and see how many times it's said it. I mean, the number would be off the charts, because Prabhupada spoke like this all the time. Actually, as Prabhupada was departing this world, he said, yes, I was a little heavy. I sometimes said dogs, cogs, camels, and asses like that. At any rate, this phrase actually wasn't created by Prabhupada, although it could be stated quite reasonably that he probably used it more than anybody else, but it originates in the Bhagavatam itself. Second canto, third chapter, verse 19. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Really serious statement there. Now, in the purport to that particular verse, Prabhupada says, the general mass of people, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life and spiritual values, are no better than animals. And in this verse, they have particularly been put on the level of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Modern university education practically prepares one to acquire a doggish mentality with which to accept the service of a greater master. After finishing a so-called education, the so-called educated persons move like dogs from one door to the next with applications for some service and are mostly driven away, informed of no vacancy. As dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, a man serves the master faithfully without sufficient rewards. Persons who have no discrimination in the matter of foodstuffs and who eat all sorts of rubbish are compared to hogs. But the human being is not meant for eating anything and everything. He is meant for eating grains, vegetables, milk, sugar, fruits, etc. Animal food is not meant for the human being. By chewing solid food, the human being has the human being has a particular type of teeth meant for cutting vegetables and fruits. This is a common argument used by vegetarians for ages, Prabhupada established a very long time ago. It is known that to everyone that one man's food is another man's poison. Human beings are expected to accept the remnants of food offered to Lord Sri Krishna, who accepts foodstuffs from the categories of leaves, fruits, flowers, etc. Therefore, a person who has no such discrimination is compared to a hog. A camel is a kind of animal that takes pleasure in eating thorns. Materialistic life is full of thorns, and so one should live only by the prescribed method of Vedic injunctions just to make the best use of a bad bargain in this material body. Life in the material world is maintained by sucking one's own blood. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing the thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel, and so the blood flows into the camel's mouth, mixed with the thorns it is chewing, and the camel thinks this is a very enjoyable taste. It is a false pleasure. Similarly, the great industrial magnates, great business personalities who work very hard to earn money by different means and questionable means, eat the thorny results of their actions. Therefore, the Bhagavatam compares them to the camels. The ass is an animal who is celebrated as the greatest fool, even amongst animals. The ass works very hard and carries burdens for the maximum weight without any profit for itself. The general mass of people work very hard, especially in the age of Kali. In this age, the human being is actually engaged in the work of an ass. Excuse me. So Srimad Bhagavatam's categorization of the common man without any spiritual enlightenment into the society of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses is not at all an exaggeration. The leaders of such ignorant masses of people may be very proud to be adorned by such numbers of dogs and hogs, but it is not very flattering. It is not very flattering. So Prabhupada makes it very clear in this purport here that the very idea of being addressed in this way is, and being flattered by such assessment, what is the benefit? if someone who has no good qualities glorifies us, what is the benefit of such words? So, we can naturally ask, how can such persons mistake other persons as supreme and fall prey to the foolish in accepting those glories? I mean, it's a very reasonable question. Well, Prabhupada leaves us with a bit of a transcendental cliffhanger, if you will, in the closing sentence of this purport. Why such persons take pleasure in being addressed as God, or why such persons are addressed as God by their foolish admirers, will be explained in the following verse. This is what you look for in a good thriller, or in a good movie, or a good book, or at the chapter ends with anticipation for the next chapter. And here Prabhupada is giving us that anticipation for tomorrow's verse. So, as they say, tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Any comments or questions?
I was just curious. You mentioned about...
Hold on. Up to yours and let me adjust mine. Go ahead. Here we go.
That Brahmaji, you mentioned about Brahmajis and also Madhvacharya. Both are our founder Acharya in one sense. Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya we see. So, loyalty to our spiritual master. Madhvacharya avoided, I'm paraphrasing what Prabhupada wrote in Chaitanya Chaitanya Purport. Madhvacharya avoided to discuss or comment or even read Brahma Vimohan Leela, Tan Kento. But we are doing it. So is that really loyal? I'm trying to avoid offense at the same time, try to understand. Is that really loyalty like that? But Krishna's pastime beautiful, Brahmaji got bewildered. So I won't talk about it because I respect Brahmaji. But is that really loyal? I'm just curious.
Who have you heard it from?
That sounds like thirsty.
No, Prabhupada said that.
Who have you heard it from?
Prabhupada.
From Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is capable, able, and required to explain these things to his disciples in such a way that they can understand the true purport. This is the significance of the Bhaktivedanta purports. This is the significance of Prabhupada's Krishna book, in that way before getting to the 10th canto, Prabhupada put the Krishna book out with the purports incorporated as a part of the text instead of separate verse and purport, so that we could clearly understand these things. So, if previous acharyas did not delve into a particular subject, but Prabhupada saw fit to do so and explain them to us in a certain way, our chastity to the Sampradaya is still intact because we're following our Jagat Guru.
So leave it as it is, don't talk much.
That's your choice.
But my mind is like, over. Is that really like, anyway, I hope Mother Chair doesn't get it.
It is possible to speak about something that may be less than flattering of someone without a critical, mean-spirited attitude about that, to speak about it. A lawyer has to do this. Present negative things that may go on or a judge or whatever, you know, but not doing it with a mean or critical spirit. A manager has to do this. You know, every 6 months I get a review at work. Manager brings me in, sits me down and says, okay, here's the following points that we need you to improve on. And there's no mean-spirited, you're a nonsense about it, but here's his strengths and weaknesses, here's what you... So Prabhupada has given us those in that way, and if we understand them in that way, then we can share them in that way, or not, our choice.
Yeah. Okay, so Radhastami is coming. I was just curious, like Madhvacharya talks, the gopi's relationship with Krishna is like a divine prostitute. Is that like, what am I mean, my mind doesn't stop thinking, but what am I supposed to do?
Janani Krishna. I don't know anything about Madhvacharya's opinion on the gopis. You're way out of my league. I'm like, that's three levels above me. Speaking of scholars,
whatever level I'm on, this is the question that confounds me, right? Since it's not good to criticize the Vaishnavas, what's the best way to criticize critical Vaishnavas?
Well, there's an interesting post that I read this morning that Ashram Swami put up, and it's a quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, where he says one should not only not criticize Vaishnavas, but one shouldn't criticize a common man. And it's a very lengthy story that relates to that, but it's worth looking up. But you know, our tendency in nature is to be very critical, so the more we can curb that, the better. You know? Pundit Rupert?
There's a big,
Right?
Okay. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks, it gives a very nice elaboration on Prajapa. When in Bhakti Loka, he describes how Shukadev Goswami used different personalities. He criticized like Vena Maharaj and this and that. Huh? Yes, so this is the point, is that for the purpose of teaching, just like this Brahma Mahamila, Lord Brahma, he's our teacher. He's teaching us that you have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
This is the point, that it's not a critical, it's actually a glorification of him, that he's so kind to us, that he's given his example, that better be careful. Atrasasra duhitrava. You don't be careful with...
This is why Brahma speaks the way he does to Narada in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He acknowledges, look, these are the things I did wrong. You know, be careful, don't make a mistake and think something that's not accurate. You know, so you're absolutely right. The example is given there. This is the purpose of the Acharya. This is why, I mean, did Prabhupada ever make an offense? Did Prabhupada ever, but when Prabhupada was departing this world, he was begging forgiveness from, you know, his different god brothers and different, because he had spoken so hard. Prabhupada never committed. And they said, no, you've never committed. But that's the mood of a humble devotee, is to set that example. So, it's after 9 o'clock before we start.
But it says that the same principle that they have at a Home Depot, I mean Lowe's, is
that. See, that goes in French right there.
Is when the manager's putting in, the idea is to try to help and improve.
Right.
Just make sure the workers know their place.
Yes,
so,
okay, Mother Ragatmaga, and then we'll finish there.
Okay, you brought up the topic of distinction between disciple and follower.
Mm.
However, oftentimes, like a disciple who is not really following, I would prefer to associate with a follower who is following the instructions.
Mm.
Of course, there's blind following, and there's really literal following.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a disciple, formally, but do they have discipline to be really called a disciple? That's
That's an important point. Prabhupada often makes disciple, the root word of that is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And to be qualified in that way, one has to have disciplines, yeah. So we'll finish there. Thank you very much, everyone. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
What's that they say? Wind up music is better than no music at all?
That's true.